Hello and welcome to It All Starts at the Dock. I'm Bob Troublecock. I'm the executive editor of Modern Materials Handling, and this is the second of two episodes brought to you by RightHeight that will look at the challenges and best practices associated with dock management. If you're not familiar with them, RightHeight created the vehicle restraint industry in 1980 with the invention of the original dock lock. The company continues to reinvent today's standards for loading dock safety. From constant light communication inside and out, to active loading verification, and proactive drive approach safety, RightHeight helps provide 24/7 safety inside and outside of your facility. RightHeight, the industry leader in quality, safety, and security at the dock. Now, joining me again on this topic is David Jeeves. David is a senior project manager with a focus on healthcare services at St. Ange. And while David's focus today is hospitals and healthcare facilities, he's designed his share of warehouse docks over the years. So, David, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be back.
It's great to have you back. We had a great conversation in our first episode where we had a chance to look at some of the fundamentals and challenges around the docks. So today we're going to talk a little bit about best practices. We're going to relate some of the things David does in healthcare because I think they're relevant to what's going on in e-fulfillment and some other industries. So I'm really looking forward to that. One of the things we want to talk about today is just how can we get the most from our dock operations and set the stage for efficiency throughout the warehouse. So let's get started. David, in the last episode, I mentioned charges from carriers when drivers spend too much time at a facility. So I know you talked about this last time, but I think it's worth repeating. How do I ensure quick turnarounds?
Yes, we did talk about that last time a little bit, Bob, and we focused kind of on dwell time in the last episode. And to minimize dwell time at the dock, which is really the carrier interaction time at the dock, we should design our operation with a couple of things in mind. I think the correct fixed equipment for the trucks being received, so dock levelers, scissor lifts, truck restraints, the proper materials handling equipment, and the proper staging space inside the facility facilitates those quick turnarounds. And then also scheduling and choreography. If I know what's coming in and when, I can be ready. So FTLs or full truckloads are easy. They're dedicated interactions with the facility. LTLs or less than truckloads may be more difficult because they're making numerous route stops and that arrival time may be a little less consistent. And then obviously, I think we mentioned this last time, the proper standard operating procedures or SOPs just makes everything run a lot smoothly.
We talked about safety in the last episode as well, but like this other one, I really think it bears repeating. I know you weren't at ProMat. I was and had a chance to visit, you know, some of the different dock solution providers. And certainly, you know, when you go to those exhibit booths, it's all about safety, both inside and outside the distribution center, you know, alerts and blocks and things to restrain your trailer outside, and then also notification inside. You had a lot of good insights about how to ensure safety at the dock. Let's talk a little bit about that again. Again, I think it bears repeating.
Sure, I agree. Safety is paramount. The efficiency of the operation is staff dependent, and staff must have a safe environment to work in. So successful dock design is the foundation. Operationalizing those SOPs that we just mentioned are important, but it comes with that fixed equipment or that material handling equipment. So the gating and safety barriers to eliminate falls, proper lighting often overlooked, not just in the warehouse, but pointing into the back of the trailer, signage and floor striping, all those things just keep your employees safe, keep them working, and keep for a successful operation.
Yeah, I just wondered, I saw a lot of new things, not just at ProMat, but the last couple of ProMats and Modexes. And again, I realize you didn't attend the trade shows, but is there any dock safety technology that you've seen, you know, that was relatively new that really caught your eye saying, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting solution. Anything that's caught your eye?
What we've been seeing a lot lately, because we're doing some of these smaller docks that are having to be flexible to some of the different truck sizes, scissor lifts, integrated scissor lifts within the dock are becoming more common. So this allows me to get my dock height all the way down to the tarmac. So if a Sprinter van shows up or a small FedEx truck shows up, I can interface with it. And because I'm creating that hole in the dock surface, I want to make sure I have the gating and the restraints there around it. And some of these are passive, some of them are active. So what we'd like to do is just take that out of the employee's mind and let that happen automatically so that those safety barriers are there and they don't have to think about that. Just one example.
Yeah. Hey, and one other technology question. I realize I'm just kind of throwing these out here. So if this isn't relevant, you know, feel free to tell me. But one of the things that I found really interesting of late from a technology standpoint, it's not so much a dock technology as much as a dock assist technology. So we're starting to see things like, you know, autonomous lift trucks for either loading or unloading. And then I think Boston Dynamics, there's a couple of others, I think Pickle is one, are developing robots that will automatically unload cartons. You know, they're not designed for pallet unloading, but carton unloading, typically to an extendable conveyor going into the trailer. I just wondered, you know, is my dock design impacted by that, or does it really matter?
Yeah, I think there's two portions of that. So ATLS systems, automatic truck loading or unloading systems, tend to be more fixed and can go in and do some of that, you said, full pallet unloading and loading. So I can go in, take a whole slug of pallets and bring them out all at once. But then that interface from that point into the racking systems, as an example, could be robotic. So instead of just employee-operated lift trucks, there are robotics that can go put away items, pallets, parcels. We actually see a lot of that in healthcare too. So all the delivery mechanisms in healthcare, and think about elevator trips and back of house corridors, not just at the dock. We're doing those full AGV AMR type of moves with robotics now.
Yeah, I saw that at, I was at Cleveland Clinic. This is like 5 or 6 years ago, but I think they were one of the first to, put a warehouse underneath their main campus. Mm-hmm. And they were using automatic guided vehicles for everything from, you know, taking meals from the meals area to the elevator and then up to the floor to towels and linens and things like that. All right, let's talk about warehouses a little bit and some of the things that are changing. So, you know, the traditional warehouse that I'm familiar with, you're familiar with, I'm sure my listeners are familiar with is, you know, the 300,000 to million square foot building, usually located in a rural or semi-rural area. Today, I know it's driven a lot by e-fulfillment, but I think also in your world, in healthcare, we're seeing a lot more smaller facilities located in suburban and urban areas, and those create all kinds of new issues, including at the dock. So you deal with this in hospital and medical facilities. I think, again, that it's not unlike what people are dealing with in e-fulfillment. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the site, the tarmac, setbacks, all those things that might impact the design of a micro fulfillment or urban fulfillment center as it relates to the dock.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Bob. I think generally the site, the overall site is smaller. And like you said, it's usually in an urban environment or a tighter environment. We won't have 150-foot setbacks for large 53-foot articulating trailers to back in. So what we typically do is we plan for this unique turnaround lane where multiple trucks are using the same space to nose in before they back in. So I need better choreography of when those trucks are arriving. So we still have dedicated docks for a truck coming in, but that space they use to maneuver into that dock is shared. So if somebody's either coming in or going out of that space when another truck arrives, it creates conflict. So what we see is we do a lot of upstream dock status boards that allow the driver to know if the dock is indeed accessible or inaccessible at the time. So literally, if it says, you know, all docks are red, that trucker's just maybe going to drive around the block a few times until that space fills up. Because if he comes in and somebody's coming out, then we're going to have conflict. So it's really just understanding how to best utilize the limited amount of space I have between the healthcare facility or this micro fulfillment center and the road, and use it more like overlap than dedicated lanes as you would see in a, you know, 50 plus dock door distribution center.
Do you also have, and I'm sure actually that you probably have this in healthcare, given the, you know, the variety of deliveries they're probably going to get. And I know it's true, you know, in e-fulfillment versus the kind of trucks coming in and the kind of trucks going out. Do you have to design to accommodate all those different things that you talked about earlier, you know, parcel deliveries that might be coming in a FedEx truck, a UPS truck, a van, LTL versus full truckload. How do you handle that in this urban environment?
Yeah, this is a big one for us. So anything from large articulating trailers, smaller straight trucks or box trucks, the waste and compactor trucks that we talked a little bit about in last episode, and even smaller delivery vans or parcel trucks. They all have different dock interaction equipment needs. So the flexibility of that dock with regard to dock levelers, scissor lifts, and ramps is vital. In healthcare, we actually have usually a small vehicle parking area so that any vehicle that doesn't need a dock interaction, such as like an elevator repairman that's coming to the hospital. Remember, I talked about a second ago, a large DC could have 50 plus doors. Hospital may have four. So if this elevator repairman parks at one of my four docks, I just lost 25% of my capacity. So we just got to be flexible enough to put the right size trucks in the right places. And then you mentioned a little bit, I think, about U-flow versus flow-through on the DC side. Remember, U-flow, I'm going to come in on the same side of the building as I'm going to go out, shipping and receiving. That allows me to flex that number of bays. Earlier in the day, maybe more of those docks are receiving. Later in the day, maybe more of them are shipping. Versus the flow through where I'm on opposite sides of the facility. And that would tend to be more dedicated, shipping on one side, receiving on the other. It doesn't have to be, you know, black and white, but it can certainly be less dedicated and less flexible in that kind of configuration.
So it's interesting you brought that up. So I never really thought about that before. Although, you know, I've seen both of those. As an example, I was in Medline's, so in your neck of the woods, healthcare, Medline's new facility north of Chicago, and it was definitely a flow through. So, you know, they had receiving on one side and shipping on the other side. I did a story with Gap on a brand new facility that they built in Texas, and Gap tends to do cookie cutter facilities, but one of the differences in design in this new Dallas facility, and again, it was a term I hadn't heard before, is they did the U-flow where they had both shipping and receiving on the same side, and they were talking about how that improved their flow. So how do you make that, you know, what are the advantages of U-flow and how do you make that decision?
Yeah, I think the main advantages is, like I said before, that flexibility in assignment of the doors. They don't have to be dedicated to a shipping or receiving function. So as you think about that, my staging lanes and my dock doors and how that interfaces with the operation I have internal to the building, if I have a big influx of receiving coming early, I can dedicate, make up a number, 10 dock doors for that. And then I can use half of those for shipping later in the day because a lot of my receiving streams go down. So I think the decision comes just based on that dock door calculation that we talked about in episode one, how many doors do I need? And that kind of aspect ratio of my facility. If I'm a 2-to-1 aspect ratio, I'll have, you know, longer linear faces for dock doors on two different sides versus if I'm working out my receiving on that shorter size, maybe I have some limitations. So it all goes back into that full kind of facility design solution.
And does workflow influence that? You know, in take a retail DC, they often, you know, receive in the morning and ship in the afternoon versus like a finished goods warehouse where they might be receiving all day long from the manufacturing mm-hmm. plant. Does my workflow influence that, or is it more, you know, how I'm shipping and how I'm staging and things like that?
Yeah, it's both. Workflow can definitely impact it. You kind of just have to make that decision if I want to dedicate doors or and I don't. And that's depending on how big the facility is, right? I definitely want to spot trailers to where that product is going. If I got 1 million square feet and I'm receiving on one far end of the warehouse and now I got to use my mobile equipment to get it to the other end, that's bad efficiency. So as I dedicate or assign those doors for one thing, receiving, as you mentioned, or shipping the other thing, let's spot those doors and have them arrive close to where the, you know, the put away point is.
Last question, or I'm going to make it next last question. So this is again something that we talked about yesterday, but I thought it was worth repeating because again, now it was a healthcare facility again, but going to the Medline facility, they had material control that was really important and conflicting materials that was important. So they were designing their receiving operations around that. I'm sure it's not limited to just healthcare. So how do you facilitate that with your dock design, if you've got to segregate materials or you've got materials, you know, that are restricted or in some way have to be segregated from other things or handled differently.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Medline facility reminds me of what we call in the healthcare world CSC, so our consolidated service centers. These are either on campus or close to campus warehouses that either operate one facility or kind of like a network of facilities.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest challenges, as you're kind of articulating here, is that clean and soiled separation on the dock. And big DCs, it's not as important, you know, finished goods and receipt materials, it's all kind of in the same world. But in healthcare, it's very different. We have clean rooms, we have refrigerated materials, we have controlled substances, we have general trash, we have regulated medical waste. All of these things, clean and soiled, coming into the same space is very challenging. So a lot of times we'll actually separate those two docks into clean and soiled sides. They will have critical adjacencies to each other so we can get from one side to the other. But, you know, and even add in like vivarium and animal receipts into this equation, and then it starts to get really complicated. So we always got to have our mind on that clean and soiled separation. And sometimes it means dedicating doors. Other times it means just good internal operations. But having that CNC, just finish the thought, Bob, having that CSC on campus or close by allows us to meter the materials coming in, control the truck size, because it might be my own fleet, and receive the product almost unit ready, right? I've done all the picking, I've done all the decasing in the CSC. So when I get it, it's ready to just come into the dock, go upstairs, go to the eighth floor. And it's really not really a dock operation. It's more of a cross dock almost, or a flow through operation with minimal staging needs. And that square footage, that cost per square footage in a hospital is very high. So anything I can do to limit the back of house space helps me with my revenue generating space inside the facility.
Yeah. So the other industry where I have seen this, you know, on control of materials and conflicting materials is the food industry. I was in a distribution center for a nuts company, right? And they had to make sure that they segregated both on receipt and handling and storage, anything that had to do with peanuts, you know, from other nut types because of peanut allergies. And and a spice distribution center, interestingly enough, in Mumbai, India, where they had things that they, you know, that they had to control because of concerns around, you know, around health, health and safety concerns because of allergies. And so I realize it's not just a healthcare kind of issue. All right, last question. And if this could be, this could be as simple as I got nothing else to say, Bob, but the last question I always ask is, you know, anything we didn't talk about or any final thought you'd like to leave with listeners as they're thinking about, you know, the redesign or the design of their docks?
Yeah, I will just kind of expand on the food type of product that you just mentioned as well. It's all the cultural dietary considerations that are now in our country and obviously impacts healthcare, creates, you know, it has just exploded the dock needs, and not only the dock needs, but obviously the kitchen and preparedness meetings with inside the kitchen. But that just causes this further separation of materials. Just think of, you know, an inbound pallet of lettuce coming in the same dock as outbound regulated medical waste. It's just things that just need to be completely separated. But yeah, as a final thought, I just think, you know, when designing a dock, you really just got to step back and think about the bigger picture. Instead of just looking at your simple one receipt that comes in, you just really want to start to plan on one, how can it be a safe environment for my employees? Because obviously they're the most important as far as the operation goes. And then how can I take the internal intent of the building, what operation am I working on, and almost try to make the dock invisible. So if I can have the dock just, you know, work in kind of sync with the internal operation, everything beyond that is just going to be a lot better and a lot more efficient.
Great. Thanks, David. That's all the time we have today. Again, I want to thank David Jeeves from St. Ange for today's conversation and Right Height for sponsoring and making these two episodes possible. And again, remember, this is the second of two episodes on best practices at the dock. I hope you'll take the time to listen to part one if you enjoyed this one. For Modern Materials Handling and Right Height, I'm Bob Triplecock. And David, thanks again.
Thank you, Bob.